This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How you doing today, sir?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Doing excellent. It's funny because it seems like the last time we spoke, you'd been very successful in theater.
Yeah.
Your film career was sort of taking off. And now, like, my site had been sort of taking off.
Yeah.
And now my site is doing much better, and you are doing much better in terms of film roles.
Well, that's very kind. There's a weird parallel thing going on. That's, yeah, your site keeps doing really well.
You're landing on your feet, though. What's it been like for you? I definitely want to start, because we have 15 minutes. You went to school in Cambridge.
That's right, yeah.
And I have friends that went to school in Cambridge, and yeah. I've been to Cambridge, and that's a hell of a town to go to school in.
It's quite beautiful, isn't it?
It's amazing.
It's one of those things that even when you wake up in the morning and you've got some massive essay to write on some great master's piece of work, and you're hungover and feeling miserable, you look outside and it's very beautiful, and you go, oh, it could be so much worse. So I was very spoiled to go there, but I loved it.
Have you been able to go back there? Do you ever go back, or is it sort of like, no?
No, I haven't been back for a while, but what was amazing, actually, is they have a great heritage or history of actors there. And when I was there, Rebecca Hall, who, you know, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, amongst other things, and Tom Hiddleston and Dan Stevens, Khalid Abdallah from Kite Runner. So there was a group of us who were all there, and it was so interesting because we all sort of would do plays together and mess about. So it's wonderful having started with having a group of friends, you know, from back in the day.
I'm going to ask you a question that almost nobody's going to get. Did you attend any of the May Balls?
I did, yeah. Really not going to get that, but these were hilarious. In fact, they were balls in which I'm dressed pretty much as I'm dressed in Les Mis. I mean, not much has changed in a couple hundred years. I did go, they're very debauched, incredibly indulgent parties, and I did go to a couple.
Okay, I'll jump into now why I get to talk to you.
Right.
Congratulations on Les Mis. Film's fantastic. You're fantastic in the role.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about, was this a project that you actively pursued, or was it something that they came to you and said, we'd like you to read?
I saw the musical when I was about 7, and I wanted to be this character Gavroche, who's like the little rock star in it, and it's sort of sat in me since then, that musical. I loved it, and I heard that they were making it, and I was shooting a film called Hick with Chloe Moretz and Alec Baldwin in North Carolina, and we're doing a night shoot. I was playing this sort of Texan meth addict, pedophile. Don't ask. We're doing a night shoot, and I was in the trailer, and I'd heard they were making the film, and so on an iPhone, so not dissimilar to your flip cam, I sort of thought, God, I'm just going to give it a shot. And so, dressed as a cowboy, I sang the video of Empty Chairs and Empty Tables, which is the character's sort of big song. And I sent it to my agents, really, to go, look, I enjoy singing. I loved this show when I was a kid. How about it? And my agent, Josh, flung that straight onto Eric Fellner, who's one of the producers. And that was sort of the start of the most rigorous X Factor American Idol style audition process that involved, you know, one day of a panel of, you know, 4 producers, the composer, the lyricist, the Tom, this Academy Award winning director, and Nina Gold, the customer. So it was definitely we were put through our paces. But what was interesting is when we started filming was hearing that everyone had that. So Russell, Hugh, Annie Hathaway, they'd all been put through that sort of rigorous process.
What was it like for you when you're going in and you know, I'm going to go sing for all these people, and this is it. I mean, if I do this, I'm going to get the role. You know what I mean? If they like me. And I spoke to a lot of casting directors, and they all say, or directors, they all say it's literally within a second of seeing someone and having them talk, they almost know if they're going to be able to do it.
I'll tell you what, it doesn't get much easier, firstly. The second thing is you're filled and fueled with adrenaline. If you really want something, you know, it's rare for me that you find something that you're so passionate about that you go sort of chasing hard, and I had from the outset chased this. But the weird thing is that you're, for musicals, songs are used to being sung out loud, but I basically took all the sort of theatre experience I'd had and film experience and tried to use sort of knowledge of both of those worlds to try and do something to reinterpret that song, which had been done brilliantly on stage for many years for the camera. Because it was like you were having to appease two camps. You had to appease the theatre world and the film world, and both of whom were meeting for the first time, as in the producers of the play and the producers of the film. And what's interesting about cameras is, of course, they pick up everything. They pick up any glimpse. So when you are adrenaline fueled and you're nervous, you try to channel all that to something helpful, but sometimes it doesn't work and sometimes it does. So,
coming from a theater background, I've spoken to a lot of actors, and they say that some of them prefer two takes, the way Clint Eastwood does it. Some love the David Fincher method of 50 takes.
Yeah.
You obviously come from the theater and a lot of rehearsal. What is what do you like to do in terms of the amount of takes on film, and talk a little bit about that?
The Fincher method. I mean, I'm someone that, you know, on stage, you never get a part right as an actor. You never nail it. And anyone that says they come out going, "I nailed that," I never believe them. It's not true. There are so many ways in which you can say a line, you know, let alone a whole character. I feel like it's very, very, very rare. I don't believe in my lifetime I'll ever nail anything. And so on stage, you screw it up each night, but you get to go and try it again the next night. Now on film, you leave at the end of the day, you get in the car to go home, and you've got no option to go back. You just have to wait 6 months and then see something which inevitably you're not going to be happy with. So certainly for me, and I remember it happened specifically on this with this big song, because each of the characters have their big song, and mine is called Empty Chairs and Empty Tables, and we did it at the end of the shoot, so you would hear whispers on set throughout the shooting process going from the crew going, did you hear about Hughes bringing him home? Or did you hear about Annie's I Dreamed a Dream? Oh my God, it's breathtaking. And so gradually the pressure would mount, and it got to the end and of the shoot, and we did it, Empty Chairs and Empty Tables, and after about 12 takes, Tom was like, "Great, mate, I think we've got it." I was like, no. And I literally was like, "Oh, we keep going until you... there is blood pouring out of my eyeballs." Like, you have to, because I just knew that I would never get a chance to do it again, and I knew too many people cared about the song and are fans of the show to not have at least given everything to it. And so I'm one of the... I've heard about David Fincher's way of working, and it sounds right up my street. Yeah.
So how many times did you actually do the song that day?
I did it 23 times, and interestingly, Tom told me a day or two ago that it was actually the 23rd take that he used. So it was worth powering through.
How much do you think there was a difference in your performance in doing the song the 23 times? Was it like slight differences each time, or was it exactly?
I do hear what you're saying. It was. I'm pretty sure it was slight. But my first ever film, which I was sort of completely out of my depth, but was an amazing experience, was a film which Robert De Niro directed, called The Good Shepherd.
I'm very familiar.
Yeah, and I remember he had a way of working, which is he'd keep the camera rolling, and you'd get to the end of an emotional scene, and he would keep the camera rolling, and you'd go back to the beginning of it and use that energy that you create at the end of the scene to then compress and then start a scene over again. And I asked Tom if I could do that on Empty Chairs and Empty Tables, because the guy's already been through... It's basically a song about survivor guilt, and all his friends have died, and somehow he's survived it. And so I thought that he's so tired at the beginning of the song that if you could use the energy that you've got to at the end and start again, you know, wipe the slate clean, but start with something that is... sort of tense within you, then that might be helpful. So that's how I did that song.
You spoke downstairs at the press conference a little bit about the 9 weeks of rehearsal.
Yeah.
When you first heard about that, were you like, "Fuck yeah," or were you a little bit like...
I was definitely "Fuck yeah." I was, because I liked the idea. But what was interesting is that it wasn't... You know, we did lots of technical things, but we didn't block it. We didn't put on a musical. A lot of that rehearsal was taking the musical, and that had been put into script form by William Nicholson, and then taking the book and finding all these elements that in the book that you could sort of weave into the fabric of the piece that would make it more detailed and make it more filmic, and that would add complications and that you can't see on stage. So a lot of that process was a literary one, and was quite a sort of rigorous, just going through your character, fighting for your character, fighting for aspects to be brought in, and that... You know, and as much as I'm a massive fan of the musical, you knew that you needed other aspects for it to work on film. So a lot of that process was a writing process, really.
Eric told me, I interviewed him earlier.
Yeah.
He mentioned that the first cut was a little over 4 hours. And right, exactly.
Right.
And that obviously we're and the one that they tested was 247.
Right.
And then Tom went in and really was selective and brought it down to what it is. Do you recall anything that you shot that actually didn't make the final cut, or was it a lot of little things?
There were pieces that were cut. And it's always weird when you watch a film. It's always weird. The first time you see it, you're always up, sort of not happy with what you've done. You're always, there's a sort of self-critical element. And also you see all the bits that have been taken out, and it's sort of more difficult to see the whole. So it was actually the second time that I watched this film that I, you know, emotionally engaged with it, because the first time you're busy seeing, scrutinising all the things that have changed. But what Tom was so sort of magnificent with was that the story was the thing, and he manages to, it's a brilliant story, it's an incredibly complicated story, and he manages to make that through line that although it is a long film, it doesn't feel that doesn't feel like there's waste, or it's a very powerful sort of through line through it. So I'd be curious to see the 4.5 hour version.
Because well, I asked him, I said, if this is a big success, is there a possibility of releasing, you know, a new version in theaters that's like an extended cut? Mm-hmm. And he said that they only scored what the final release was, and that, you know, they'd have to really go in and do more scoring and be a lot of work, but it could be worth it. Yeah. So,
well, I think what was amazing talking to Tom, because it felt new, this whole experience, none of us knew what we were doing. As I said in that press conference, it's like we all helped each other out, whether that was from the, you know, everyone was, it was new for everyone. So the sound department had never done this thing of having to, you know, radio the music into our ears from a distance, which is fine if you're in a studio, but if you're climbing up a mountain, which Hugh is, like, how do you put a ring around a mountain in order that the radio stuff's going to work? And everything sort of felt new. And I remember that Tom said during the editing process when I was speaking to him, he's like, I can't tell you how complicated it is, because every edit you change, so every time you choose a different take, because we chose the speed of the songs, so each take is different, every time you shave a bit off, you have to then go and write out new orchestrations, get an orchestra in, record the orchestra. So it's like every element normally in a film you can just shift and change, and you know, sure. Whereas here it was, and he said it's like chasing your own tail. It's like everything is a cyclical. So I think the complications were extraordinary. So I think when I spoke to him, when we first showed it, he had finished it the night before, and he talked about the director's cut, and he's like, I'm so tired, I can't even possibly consider the notion at the moment.
Before I run out of time with you, I definitely have to ask, you've either screen tested or are rumored for a few big projects
right.
in the future.
Yeah.
What's it like for you being mentioned alongside all these other actors for, say, Spider-Man 2 or for Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting about it is it's firstly very flattering, but I don't know, it's a bit like someone said in this interview earlier, you know, did you know all the people you're auditioning against? And I'm like, I'm one of those people, I just quite like to keep my head down and try and put one foot in front of the other, and because I get affected by noise, you know, and the feeling of it, so I try not to look into that, and sometimes it's true and sometimes it's not. So it's very flattering, and I feel really privileged for the moments that are true, but I try not to look at it.
Well, I'll say so, this, because obviously there's many people who are, you know, Marvel is looking at and Sony are looking at. I mean, these are huge franchises, but I'll ask you as just a comic book person, are you a big comic book person? Are you familiar with these characters? Is it the superhero genre is getting more and more popular? And
it is.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, and I've always been, do you know what, I have been a fan, and I think that the films, the ones that I go and see those films, and the ones that are good I absolutely love, and the ones that aren't I don't so much. But having seen things like Andrew and Emma's performance in Spider-Man, it's often that the scale of the pieces can make an audience think that there's so much going on that you sort of forget that there are brilliant things being done by the actors in the middle of it. And it was the same with the Avengers, and I'm lucky enough to have worked with some of these actors, and some of them are friends. And so you do go in from an actor's point of view, scrutinising that. And I think that through The Dark Knight Rises and all of these films, there is a weightiness that's being given to these pieces now that is, for me, is so much more extraordinary than when they felt more light.
Totally. I think that in Spider-Man, Andrew and Emma's performance, their relationship is the best part of the film.
Interesting.
I really do.
I mean, they have fantastic chemistry, don't they?
Well, I think they were falling in love on screen.
So, yeah. But I've done that, and often it reads as really bad chemistry. It's that famous thing, yeah.
My last thing, because I got to wrap with you. Are there other projects that you are looking at, other scripts that you're thinking about? I'm imagining that this is going to be a leapfrog into a lot of other things.
Well, since Les Mis, before that, I did a play, Richard II in London, and I did My Week with Marilyn, and I did a thing called Birdsong for the BBC, all of which were passion projects. And as an actor, you spend years doing whatever you can get to just try and be employed. And gradually, over the past year or two, I've been lucky enough to do things that were all sort of passion projects. And so what's amazing is that, I'm trying to keep that alive for as long as I can, to do things that I actually care about. And so Les Mis, since Les Mis, I've been reading some really interesting things. I think there are some interesting things in the mix, but we'll have to see. I've got nothing to give you.
No, I understand completely. I'm going to say thank you so much.